the title of the talk doesn't really tell what it's all about, but we'll see in a minute what it concerns. It is a way to have successful peace and happiness in one's heart. And for that, the Buddha said, there are only four kinds of emotions which are worthwhile having and cultivating. All others are to be sublimated, changed into one of those four. Now, as I explained this morning, with some mindfulness and attention on oneself, we come to realize that we really live according to our feelings, that we are reacting to our feelings with an emotional reaction. And if we come to watch ourselves more closely, we also come to realize that we are like a pre-programmed computer. Press a button and we get the same printout. And if you start to take this sort of thing seriously and watch yourself, you will notice that given the same trigger, the same printout appears. One of either like or dislike, resistance or wanting. Now, this is not necessary. We don't have to live like that. First of all, it's bothersome, it's uninteresting, and it makes us, as I explained earlier, look for the right trigger all the time. Well, first of all, we can't always find it, and secondly, that too is an unnecessary expenditure of energy, and it will never work, because the trigger, of course, isn't permanent either. But what does work is to change our emotions to those which will be peaceful and which have a measure of satisfaction within them, which makes it possible for us to react in a totally different manner. Now, the first one of these is in Pali, metta. In English, we don't have a word for it. Neither do we have in German. I don't know about Swedish. So we have to make a conglomerate. We have to make two words with a hyphen in the middle. Loving kindness. Which, in the English language, is a rather dull word and doesn't have a lot of power behind it. It's a word that's not used very much and doesn't have much meaning to it. So let's use the word love. Everybody knows the word, and everybody knows the feeling. Some people haven't got in touch with it as much as others, but everybody knows something about it. And what we do know about it is not what the Buddha had in mind. What we know about love is an emotion which is directed towards one, or possibly two or three or five or six people, depending on who is within the nearest family circle or within the nearest circle of our attention and affection. We can also know loving maybe a country, an ideal, an idea. But particularly and primarily, we know the love towards a restricted number of people. And we are also usually under the impression that love is depending upon having those people around, which is the first absurdity that we are dealing with, because how can an emotion be dependent upon one or two out of millions, billions of people? And then we have the often experienced and written about and well-known tragedy of losing that particular person, and there we are, no love. So what we are having is a dependency syndrome. And since we're having a dependency syndrome, we are faced with fear. And fear is always connected to hate. We never fear what we love. We always fear what we hate. And we're not that we hate the person. What we hate is the idea that that person might disappear. Because underneath it all, we already know that first of all, nobody is permanent. Death is certain, life is very uncertain. But we also know that emotions and feelings are uncertain, fickle to say the least, and so we have a certain fear within that what we base our love on, this feeling that we're really keen on having, may lose its object of attention, and therefore we may lose that emotion. A total absurdity, because the emotion that we have within us, if it is dependent on another person, must be of a very small and unimportant nature, if it can only accommodate one or two people. And this is why we have that relationship, that human relationship between people always has an aspect of either attraction or repulsion in it. I want it or I don't want it. It doesn't have the peaceful feeling of just loving. The second absurdity is that we're looking for someone to love us. Now, that has on as its base, naturally, the support system, that we are considered lovable. Somebody's going to love us. And because of that support system, then we are willing and able to love back. Well, maybe we are able and willing to love back, but the love that another person has for us is their emotion. They are feeling it. Whether we feel something or not in return is then our emotion. To wait for somebody else to love us may take a long time, it may not happen, and it may not be the kind of person that we find useful to love back. So we are constantly either in the quandary of looking for an emotion which we could be having in our heart, or not having it at all, not knowing what it's all about, and still feeling bereft of it. Because a heart which doesn't have love in it doesn't feel complete. It feels that it has something lacking. And this is why we have this very foolish notion of love makes the world go round, because everybody is looking for it. Wonderful state of affairs. If everybody were looking to give it, we'd have a totally different world to live in. Now, we can't expect others to do it, but we could expect ourselves to do it. We could do something about it. It's one of the most important functions we could have in this lifetime, namely to educate our heart to have the kind of love in it that the Buddha called metta, and which does not have a particular object, which is independent of objects or subjects, which is independent of the lovability of others. Nobody except an enlightened person is totally lovable, which includes ourselves. So if we're looking for somebody who's totally lovable, we're already up the creek. We're not going to find that person. There isn't somebody like that. Then if we are trying to find somebody who is more lovable than not, we are constantly judging and weighing somebody else's characteristics. It doesn't make for a loving heart. It maybe makes for approval and praise, appreciation, but it certainly doesn't make for love. A loving heart is a quality of the heart, doesn't have anything to do with who is there, what is there, and whether that other person is interested in loving us back. It doesn't have anything to do with the qualities we find in someone. The only thing that it has something to do with is the qualities that we find in ourselves. And since we all have love and hate within us, we can find both. Now, this dependency relationship that I talked about earlier has one very good feature in it. Namely, it makes us acquainted with the feeling of love. And if we then can use that feeling to extend upon it and enlarge upon it, we at least have a notion how to deal with this matter. Most people find it extremely difficult. And what they find even more difficult is to love themselves. And if we don't love ourselves, it's going to be extremely hard to love someone else. When we remember the words of love thy neighbor as thyself, we have an immediate understanding of the fact that you've got to love yourself before you can love your neighbor. And if you're going to love your neighbor in the same way you love yourself, well, you're going to have to make something worthwhile loving in yourself so you can do the same to your neighbor. Love is a quality and not a value judgment. And this value judgment is what we are dealing with. Now we have, at every border, we have the passport control. You can only get in if you've got a valid piece of paper saying that you're so-and-so and you're not going to be a burden to the country you come to. And then they let you in after they've made a value judgment of who you are and what's going to happen when you're there. In former years, the borders were even more closely guarded. But what happens at these borders between countries is exactly what happens within our own hearts. We have a border control, a passport control. We only let those people in whom we think have the right qualifications. They've got a piece of paper saying who they are, what they are. They believe the same things we do. They look the way they are supposed to look. They have the right kind of color, shape, race, sex, and belief system. And if everything fits, we may let them in. We're even more stringent with our regulations than they are at most borders these days. What we see in the world is an exact replica. It's a mirror system to ourselves. The world hasn't made us. We've made the world. And what we see there is exactly what we're doing. And it's a very interesting objective to watch it. It's an external mindfulness. But when we see the things that we do not approve of, and they are legion, there's so much of it that we see that we don't approve of. The first thing to do is to change that within ourselves, to remove the border guards and let people in because they're people. And that's all. No other reason. And as we let more and more people into our heart expands naturally, otherwise they can't get in. It expands and it grows. And as it grows and expands, it becomes malleable. It becomes smooth and pliable. And as it becomes pliable, it has a quality of lovingness within. Because it doesn't pay attention anymore to the value judgment. It only has that one quality within. Now with that quality, we have a way of dealing with our coexisting people that we meet every day. Our everyday life is the most excellent learning situation that we could have. Most people, from morning to night, meet someone, be it in an office, be it in a shop, be it on the street, be it in a vehicle. Wherever we are, we meet people. And if they're strangers, we disregard them. Don't let them come too near. They should leave us our space. Lebensraum. Excellent German word that tells exactly what we've been doing over the past 50 years in Europe. We want our own space. Don't let anybody intrude upon it. If we have seen them before, we may say good morning to them without much feeling behind that or any feeling at all. If they are well known to us, we might feel obliged to talk to them. And then when we come home in the evening, we're dead tired, we might not even show any love to our family. We may or may not, depending on the mood we're in. Now, these kind of ways of dealing with other people are totally unsatisfactory to oneself. It makes life grim, makes it dull, it makes it cold, it's adapted to the weather. It's a kind of weather in one's heart that doesn't have a feeling of warmth and embracing within. Now, that other people may act like that has nothing to do with us. Absolutely nothing. But if we start opening up our heart and responding to others, paying attention to the fact that there are other people who are living with us, having a connection with us for the simple reason that they're there. That's enough. There is some connection between us because we are together. Surely that's not just a strange accident. So when we are together with other people, there is that possibility of practicing opening up one's heart and going out to those people with loving thoughts and loving feelings, even saying something. And the response is will probably be amazing. Everybody is looking for love. Very few people are willing to give it. The one who gives it gets it back a thousandfold. But this is not the reason for giving. It's a law of nature. And if we live with the laws of nature, and if we follow the laws of nature, and realize that we are subject to them, and stop resisting them and trying to change them, we will find that life flows. Trying to change and resisting the laws of nature have in Europe shown themselves in dead forests and polluted rivers. Dead hearts and polluted emotions, the same thing. The laws of nature are something that are not protective towards us. And that's why we're trying to change them. They're threatening. They're threatening because it's very easy to be annihilated. Not only physically, that's also very easy. It's very easy to die. One false step on the highway and we're dead. It's very easy. But there's also the possibility of our ego not finding a support system. And that annihilation is something that we feel to be extremely threatening. And this is where we feel that we have to protect ourselves and guard ourselves, and that's why we have all these border guards and all these protections. And if anybody gets too near, when we haven't made up our mind that we're going to let them in, then we start very often not just defending, that's the first thing we do, defending ourselves, second step is attacking. And then we have these unfortunate relationship problems, crawls in the family, difficulties at work, and all the rest of the interpersonal relationships that don't work. If we've done it often enough, our next idea is to remove it, not to have anything to do with it, just to keep ourselves apart, just pretend that we have no interest in all that. It is not a satisfactory way of living. We are having a sort of feeling inside which is as if there is something missing. There's something missing within, and we can't quite put our finger on it. And many of the things that we do in order to fulfill that missing hole within, fill it with something, are rather geared towards external matters, so such as having some sense pleasures. But none of that will fill that emptiness within the heart that doesn't love. If we have any kind of love at all in our lives, the first thing we can do with it is expand it. Reach out to others. Give it. But not with the idea of getting it back. Not with the idea of wanting something in exchange. But we're just with the very simple idea of educating our heart towards love. When we go to school and university, we educate our mind to thinking. And as we educate ourselves to being able to think, our mind is able to grasp more interesting aspects. Now, as we never get a chance to educate our heart in school, we might as well do it now. Because the whole of our adult life is an adult education class. That's the only way we can come to terms with it. If we look at it as an adult education class, we're looking at it properly. We have constant opportunities to do something, to grow. And one of the most important things we can do is educate our heart. So as we have a knowledge already what it feels like to love, we can start from there and expand upon the people whom we meet very often. If we don't feel anything, it's very helpful to think it. Because thinking is also a sense contact, and the feeling will follow. If we don't feel anything but think it, it's also very helpful to do something. To do something such as going out of one's way to be helpful, going out of one's way to give presents, going out of one's way to make the other person know that we care. The more caring people there are, the easier it is to live in the world. But most importantly, it's easy for the one who cares. Not for the one who is cared for. Because all emotions are ours, not somebody else's. So the easy thing comes for the one who cares, the one who does want to go out of his or her way to be loving. That the far enemy of love is hate is easy to see. The near enemy is attachment. As I mentioned earlier, if we are attached to just a few people and are really hanging on, we are also involved with fear. And being attached very strongly, it is detrimental to growing. A heart that doesn't love is called, in Buddhist terminology, a shrunken heart. Attached to a few people, the heart is shrunk. If we're very strongly attached, we can't enlarge it. But when we can, and it can become almost infinitely enlarged, because there is no limit to the amount of love that we can have, then we have an entirely different attitude towards ourselves and others. The first thing that happens is that we don't take ourselves quite as seriously anymore as we used to. We're not quite as important anymore as we thought we were. Other people are at least equally important, or more so. And that's very helpful, because then we are not looking for ego support all the time. Looking for ego support is very bothersome. We can't always get it. We can't always be praised. We can't always be successful. We can't always be loved and appreciated. We very often get the opposite. And then when we get the opposite, we feel downtrodden. We feel shaken in our self-confidence. But if our ego isn't quite as demanding anymore, if we have put other people ahead by loving them, then this problem doesn't exist. If we don't get the ego support, it's all right. We love people, so we have our love to base ourselves on. That people don't deserve the love is not the question. Nobody does. We don't either. Love is not something that we measure out according to worth. It's not like putting it on a scale where we weigh it. It is something that the heart can have as a quality. And as it, when it does that, then it comes to a feeling of unity. Generally, people feel separated from each other, except the few people that they happen to live with, and even there it doesn't always work. But they feel separated from other people like a single unit that has to protect itself against all outer influences that could attack it in some way and take something away. But if we educate our heart to be loving and giving, then that separation slowly and gently disappears, and we feel as part of the whole. We come nearer to the truth. We are part of the whole, and not just of those people that we see and know, but of the whole of existence. The whole of existence has a manifestation, and we are one of those manifestations, but so is everybody else. And if we don't love those other manifestations, how can we love ourselves? And if we don't do that, how can we live successfully? It is not possible to be successful by amassing a fortune or by becoming famous or by having all the things that the world supplies. The only way to be successful is to have within peace and happiness. And that is success. When we get to know other people because we want to extend love to them, we often find that others are not friendly, not helpful. They are not the kind of people that we find easy to love. Now everybody has that kind of problem. But there we can call upon the second of the emotions that the Buddha said are worthwhile to cultivate, and that is compassion. Now, compassion has as its far enemy cruelty, which is easy to see, but the near enemy is pity. And that's not so easy to see because they're very similar. Pity is when we're sorry for other people. But compassion is when we feel with them. Com is with, passion is feeling. It's empathy. The easiest way to arouse that in oneself is when we have found within ourselves that there is a certain amount of suffering that no outer situation can relieve. It is impossible to relieve that inner suffering, which is due to the fact that all our pleasures have to be renewed all the time, that our bodies are not permanently healthy and young and beautiful, that nothing that we can grasp can be held onto. And that we cannot have a guarantee that happiness will sit within. Now, this kind of suffering that we see within ourselves is obviously in everybody. But only if we have seen it in ourselves. If we haven't seen it in ourselves, we don't know it about anybody else. And then if somebody else becomes abusive and contradictory or whatever they may be, then we think, what a dreadful person. But in reality, what the person is doing, they're just feeling awful that day, they're noticing their suffering, and they're reacting to their own suffering. Now, if we can see that quite clearly, then some compassion can arise because we know about our own suffering. Whatever we see in others, we will only understand what we see when we understand ourselves. It's a complete mirror that we have in front of us. It's not that person is awful and I'm nice. It's just that at that particular moment, that person's suffering has come to the foreground. That's all, that's the difference. This pity means that we're sorry for someone, that we think, oh, what a dreadful life they're having on, how difficult everything is. But that means we're separating ourselves again from them. If we want to be together with them, and if we really feel that there is a certain unity between all living beings, then we need to feel with other people. Now, we can only be helpful to others if we have already learned to deal with our own suffering. If we know and have not tried to get away from it, but if we know how to deal with it. Most people have a set routine how to deal with their suffering. The first way is to blame someone else. It's the most popular way. There's always someone, usually it's the people one lives with. If we can't find anybody there, or if we have found that this doesn't work very well because we get into terrible arguments, then we look for some outside source that we can blame. There's always someone or something. If we are not interested in doing that, or if we have exhausted all possibilities of that, then we try to divert ourselves. That means we turn on the television, get on the telephone, turn on the radio, read the newspaper, take a novel, or go on a trip, so that we can divert our attention from that which is within. If we have already exhausted all those possibilities, then we might start feeling sorry for ourselves. What terrible suffering oneself has because that other person did this or that. That is also a possibility. And if that doesn't work, then there is also the last resort to become depressed. None of it works. None of it relieves any suffering whatsoever. In fact, it makes it worse. The only thing to do with any kind of pain or grief is to welcome it as a teacher. It's the only real teacher there is. If we welcome it as a teacher, then we learn to deal with it. Then we can see that it isn't the situation, it isn't the person, it isn't the trigger. It's our own reaction to it that made it suffering. And when we see that quite clearly, then we also see the way out, to stop reacting. To stop reacting to it in a way which is trying to resist it and change it to something else. And as we do that, we can watch it disappearing. Everything that has arisen must disappear. Now, if we have learned a way of doing that and are able to impart some of that to someone else, we can be very helpful to them. That's compassion. But in a natural way, we may not be asked by them to help them. We may just have just be present when somebody else suffers. One of the great ways to help other people is to just listen. That is love and compassion combined. To just listen to another person without trying to interject one's own ideas and own opinion, own suffering, own knowledge, without putting anything of one's own in, just to be there to listen. It is something that people pay enormous amounts of money for, to professional listeners. We can all be a listener just out of love and compassion. We don't have to get paid for it. Now, there are people who take advantage of that sort of thing. We need a little bit of wisdom. But in general, it is something that we can give. Everybody has a little bit of extra time. That is something we can give just out of the feeling of wanting to be helpful and attentive to others. There is nothing that is more important than having the ability and the willingness to help another being. The ability comes from attending to oneself. The willingness comes out of love. If we had a lot of that in the world, we wouldn't be having 43 wars at this point in time. Right now, 43 different wars going on. Obviously, those people aren't very interested in loving each other. Well, at the moment, it doesn't happen to be right next door, but it's not that long ago where it was right next door. And that's not them that are doing it. It's us. We're all doing it. Because we are threatened, and we are protective, and we are defensive. And this defensiveness is something we can watch in ourselves. It comes to the fore when somebody criticizes us, when somebody talks to us in a way that we don't approve of. Defensiveness. And then we know why everything looks the way it does. We can't really change the world, but it so happens that we are the world. Each one of us is part of it. So if we make a change in there, we have changed the world. It's as simple as that. And if more and more people will do it, if more and more people will get interested in opening up their hearts and having the kind of heart where everybody is welcome, no matter who they are, then the world has changed. We always deplore what's going on. Well, there's nothing much to do about deploring. We should rather start working on it. There are two ways of actually doing this work. The first one I've already mentioned, that is to deliberately say something, do something that will show an act of love and compassion, such as listening, or such as giving, whatever it may be, even though the feeling may not yet be there. And the second way that helps is to do the kind of meditation that deals with just that aspect. And I have the intention of showing that to you and leading you through it so that you can then, if you're willing, to use it at home and use it as a guideline, use it as a process of a direction of thought and feeling which will bring a great deal of security and satisfaction into your own heart. Whether the other people that it's directed at get anything out of it or not, that's up to them. There's nothing we can do about that. So after we have finished maybe with some questions, I will lead you through that meditation. I just want to briefly, because the time as usual is running out, mention the other two emotions, which are also ways of dealing with one's own heart. The third one is joy with others, which has as its enemy envy and jealousy. Now, envy and jealousy are destructive emotions, and they are hate emotions, and they are destructive of oneself and destructive of relationships, and they are destructive of nations. So what we see in ourselves, we see everywhere. And its far enemy is this envy and jealousy, but the near enemy is hypocrisy. Just saying the words and not meaning them. And being quite sure of that, that one doesn't mean them. But if we have joy with others' good fortune, what we have is a possibility of seeing our unity again. If something good happens in the world, and it happens to someone else, well, it's good, isn't it? What could be better than something good happening? Whether it's happening to the fellow next door, or whether it's happening to someone in a different country, or whether it's happening to a colleague at work, or whether it's actually happening to me, what's the difference? It's happening. And as it's happening, it adds to the goodness in the world. It needs that underlying feeling of coexisting. We cannot live by ourselves. It is impossible. Even if we remove ourselves to a cave in the mountains and never see anybody, it will still need the help of others to exist. And hardly anybody wants to do that. Here, for instance, in a city, if we do not coexist with each other, at least on the basis that we do now, where we tolerate each other, we couldn't even continue living. But it's much better and much more satisfying, and it's the only way that we'll ever find security within ourselves, if we don't just coexist, but if we live with others as if they were ourselves. And that's joy with others. Those first three emotions, love, compassion, and joy with others, lead to a fourth one. The fourth one is actually an enlightenment factor. It is the epitome of emotions. It is the one thing that is makes it possible to have total clarity in the mind. The purification of our emotions brings the clarification of mind. If you look at emotions, as we all have known them, which are, for instance, full of hate, we can no longer see the situation. All we see is the hate. If we look at an emotion, if we have an emotion, which is full of passion, passionate wanting, all we can see is that passion. We have no longer a clear view of the actual matter. It is as if we are being drowned in a huge ocean wave of that emotion. So if we purify and bring our emotions to an even keel, we have a much better chance of seeing reality. So if we are working on those three within ourselves, it comes to the result that our very strong dislikes and our very strong wants are modified, because we can always substitute. And this is where some of the daily work can take place, the substitution. If, for instance, we are disliking someone, resisting, rejecting, because that person is obviously doing something bad or saying something awful, when we see that that person is just having a lot of pain and grief, we can substitute our dislike with compassion. And as we keep on doing that, it becomes easier and easier. And we're constantly substituting anything negative with something positive. You can imagine that it is, in the end, we can come to a feeling of equanimity, of even-mindedness, where whatever happens, it does not produce indifference in us, but it's just happening. And the love and compassion in the heart doesn't change, but the reaction no longer has to be one of wanting or discarding. And equanimity has as its far enemy restlessness, worry, anxiety, but as its near enemy, indifference. Indifference is that protective attitude we take when we don't even want to know about our emotions because we feel that they might be detrimental. We don't even want to know about other people. We just refuse to open ourselves up. That's indifference. And then we try to live through the head. If we try to live through the head, we are one-sided. All of us have head and heart. And as you know, the right side of our brain is what we call the feminine side. It has the feeling aspect. and it goes to our left side of the body. And the left side of the brain has the male aspect, which is a rational thinking aspect, and it goes to the right side of the body. Now, whether one is a female or a male, body has nothing to do with it. All of us have both sides. If we only develop the one, which is very prevalent in Western society, because that's how one makes money, with the rational aspect of thinking, then we have lost the touch, and to get in touch with our feeling aspect, we are sort of cut off in the middle. And life, although it may be quite successful from a material standpoint, has a feeling of dryness about it. There's no juice in it. The juice comes from the heart. And the dryness also has a feeling of disinterest. Because of the dryness, there's nothing that's really fascinating. One has lost the childlike interest in the newness of things. A child always lives in the moment and is fascinated by what goes on. It doesn't have the wisdom to know that. We have enough wisdom to realize it, but we're not doing it anymore. So we could become as children again if we develop our heart faculty. And the heart faculty, everybody has it, but it needs to be deliberately developed so that it has the balance within in everyone, in every person, where we do not need another person to balance us. If we want to have another person, that's fine, but we don't need it. We can balance ourselves. When we have that balance within, then we have the emancipation of the sexes within each person. And it doesn't need a great demonstration outside, it just needs a demonstration inside. Equanimity is the kind of feeling which keeps us on the fulcrum, on the middle, in the balance. We don't go up, we don't go down. We realize what's going on, but we base our reaction on the security of our own loving kindness. That gives a feeling of security and self-confidence, because no matter what happens, somebody abuses, accuses, somebody does things that we are, on our own reaction, we feel totally secure. It's the only security there is. All the insurance companies in the world can't manage to make us secure. That is the security, to rely upon our own heart quality and to know we can rely upon it. Because if we can't rely upon ourselves, whom are we going to rely upon? Others? They're just as unreliable. Something outside of ourselves? How do we know? Is it happening? But here we can take a step towards it, and that will give us a great deal of benefit in our daily lives and also lead us on to a spiritual transformation.